Hello and welcome to another episode of Meta Sidekicks. My name is Liv and this is the podcast where we talk about all things metaphysical, paranormal, spiritual, and in between. Today we're going to be talking about Trump. Trump cards, that is. No, I have been very intimidated by the divination tool of tarot or cardomancy, if you will. I think that's what tarot falls under is, you know, divination through cards. But it's always been something that has been a little on the outskirts of my scope of understanding, but nonetheless been something that I'm very, very interested in. So instead of continuing to allow tarot to intimidate me, I have sat down and tried to understand the theory of tarot, which is going to be today's topic. Ever since I've been little, I've struggled with comprehension of things. Well, I guess it's not comprehension. It's just I was never very good in school. It wasn't until maybe middle school, I would say, when I got a whole bunch of new friends. Because when I was in the city, the town that I grew up in, there was three elementary schools that all dumped into one middle school. So when I got to middle school, all of my friends changed entirely. I want to say in elementary school, I was the person that struggled to get good grades. I never really wanted to show my report card to my parents because I usually was like a C straight student, maybe a D, maybe a B, or just an S for satisfactory. And it wasn't until middle school and high school that my friend group changed. And because of that, my academics changed. It really was just like the people that I was around influenced my ability to do well in educational things. So we had our little group of friends that we made in high school and we called ourselves the nerd herd. We all tried to be in like the AP classes, the advanced classes. So when you change the people that you're sitting at the lunch table with to individuals that are talking about how they're going to study for the Spanish test versus like what shows they're watching on TV, it really changes your grades. And I was very lucky to have that. And through my friends that I made in high school and middle school, I learned how to learn, which was something no one had ever taught me before. I always struggled in school where it seemed like a teacher would give me a concept to learn. Specifically, I struggled really hard in math. History and like reading, easy, but math and science was always hard for me because it seemed like people would say, well, this is what we're learning. This is what it is. Now you just have to know it. And it wasn't until I made my new friends that I was able to understand that if you can understand how and why something works, then you don't have to memorize things to get them right on a test. So again, that's why we're going to be talking about the theory of tarot today, because I feel like in the spiritual community, it's almost, there's like rules and regulations to tarot, and you can't buy a tarot deck for yourself. Someone has to gift it to you, and this is the card and the way that you need to look at this card, and you have to memorize its meaning, and if you don't memorize its meaning, then you're not going to be able to give viable readings to yourself or to others. And I want to try and take away the memorization aspect of it a little bit by giving you guys the theory behind it, because if you're able to understand how it works in theory, then you'll be able to put it into practice. Maybe a lot less stressfully, because again, like I said, tarot's been something that intimidates me. And instead of being scared of it, I'm going to try and understand it, because a lot of nervousness comes from not understanding something. So if you're able to understand it, then you'll be able to not be so scared and hopefully use it to your benefit or the benefit of others. So that's a little bit of the inspiration as to why I wanted to do a tarot theory podcast for you all, because I've also learned over the past 5 years of being a part of Metapsychics that symbolism and not necessarily the memorization of like, this is what a tarot card means, but more so, you know, tarot cards are a form of divination, and divination is just something that helps you channel spiritual energy around you. So for me, for instance, as a mental medium, I use just my own brain to channel energy, which is totally fine. But sometimes it's hard if you're not someone that receives visual cues like in a mental form, because for me personally, I receive thoughts, images, feelings, and emotions that I recognize as not my own. And I'm sure a lot of you, when you're doing things in your own spiritual practice receive that information in similar or different ways, like comparative and contrasting ways of channeling spirituality. But when it comes to tarot can help you sort of condense or simplify your thoughts, because all of the things that you may be missing by getting only the information mentally or in your head is going to be shown to you in a physical, visual way, i.e. the tarot cards. So it's just a tool to help you in your channeling practice or your spiritual practice, however that looks and feels to you. So in order to make tarot seem a lot less intimidating and much more open for beginners to embark on their own spiritual journey with it, we're going to learn about the numbers, the planets, the card meanings, and the spreads that you can do for tarot today. Now, before we get into the numerology and the order of the cards and all of the other subsequent things that I just listed to you, let's get a little quick backstory on tarot itself. So originating in Italy in the 15th century, Tarocco was a card game played by the fancy aristocrats of Italy back in the day. So the card game itself was played differently depending on the region that it was being played in. However, it's sort of like a combination of the game that we all know today called Uno and the old card game, the traditional card game called War. So it has to be played with the suits and the trump cards. So originally there were no card games really with what we know as trump cards. Trump cards specifically are the cards that like win a hand, if you will. So Tarocco was specifically created with the 22 trump cards. And again, that changes by the regionality of it, because there can be different types or different variations of Tarocco. So like one of the variants is called Torricini and another one is called Bolognese. And then there's also Sicilian Tarocchi. So there's just a lot of different variations, and it depends on where you're playing the game that the trump cards, the numbers of the tarot cards and the deck all are a little bit different. But specifically, going back to the idea of trump cards, the tarot card deck was created for the trump cards to be played in the game. So if one player puts down a certain suit, say it would be like clubs, and clubs in modern day tarot, or tarot back then, was wands, then you would have to put up a card that beats that card numerically, like following suit in the order of the cards in the deck, or you would play a trump card, which would then win the hand. So it's all about what kind of cards do you have in your hand that can help you win the rest of the cards that are being played, i.e. like Uno, or a little bit like War. And one of the things I found most interesting is I've always wondered why tarot cards, like the original tarot cards, the art style on the decks, look the way that they do. And that's because it was created during the Renaissance period for the fancy-pantsy-smancy people of Italian aristocracy. And that was during the Renaissance period. Hence why the artwork of more traditional decks mimics the Renaissance style, which I thought was really cool. And you know how nowadays with everyone's tarot decks, how certain people feel pulled to certain types of artwork, et cetera, et cetera. Even back then, I was reading on a Google article or another like thing on the internet, which of course, all of the sources that I have will be listed below. So if you want to go on your own rabbit hole, please go down to the description below or the show notes, and you can find all the sources to do your own sort of cross-reference or deep dive into tarot theory yourself. But people used to make like, you would show up to the fancy parties, right? And all the Italian people were like, oh, we're playing tarot over here. But if you were cool enough, you'd bring your own tarot deck that you specifically had created for you. That's how cool tarot was back then. And now I just think that's funny, because nowadays so many different variations of tarot have been created that it's, you know, everyone has their own sort of deck in and of itself too. So I don't have a deck specifically created for myself, but that would be pretty cool. I guess I'm not that fancy. So anyways, Tarot, again, was just during the Renaissance period. It was just a card game that people would play in high society. And if you were cool enough, you'd have had a tarot deck made specifically for you. And, you know, your trump cards would be different and all of your pip cards. That is what the minor arcana is, because we'll get into that later, the major and minor arcana of the cards itself. But the pip cards are just like the suits. So the clubs, the spades, the hearts, and the diamonds, those were all transferred into different types of things. So like the pentacles, the swords, the cups, and the wands. But those are the pip cards, and you would play those during the card game as well. And then you had the trump cards, which, you know, would beat a lot of different things. They would beat all of the pip cards except for if someone else laid down a trump card. Then if you had, say, the fool would be trumped by the world card, et cetera, because it all goes in a certain order as well, which is what we're going to get into shortly. So tarot wasn't used as cardomancy or for divination until the almost worldwide spiritualist movement that started taking place in the mid to late 1700s, early 1800s, and then a little bit into the turn of the century. So I know we've talked about before, like Ouija boards and their origin, as well as tarot itself. But I always thought that, you know, tarot was being used with just normal playing cards during the Renaissance era, and then that's how divination sort of started as well. But it wasn't till way, way later when the spiritualist movement started. So we're saying like 1400s, 1450s is when the game of Tarocchi or Tarocco, whatever you want to call it in this instance, was created just as a card game. And then it wasn't until the spiritualist movement, until the 1750s, 1730s, 1800s, that tarot started being used as a form of divination. And specifically, Jean-Baptiste Alliette coined the term cardomancy, and he was the first person to give meaning to tarot cards. So this man lived between 1738 and 1791, and he wrote a book called The Book of Thoth. He was very, very into Egyptian culture and religion, and a lot of his symbolism and spiritualist work sort of revolves around a lot of Egyptian influences as well. So the influence and the spread of Tarocco as a card game started in Italy, spread to France, got super popular in Germany, and then during the spiritualist movement in the 1700s to 1800s, that is when cardomancy and being used for divination, tarot cards became important.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Now let's move on to being able to break down the structure of tarot so that we can use it for ourselves. Now, another one of the things that sort of enlightened me or inspired me to make this podcast on tarot theory is because I heard someone say that tarot in and itself tells a story. So when you pull a card for yourself or others, it's kind of like spirit showing you where you or someone else that you're pulling the cards for are at in your own life. Because if you boil it all down, as you'll see today, tarot is the story of the fool or the hero's journey. So I'm sure if you have gone to school, or I know a lot of people are very interested in like literature or reading, things like that. If you've ever taken courses in like story building, there's something called the hero's story. And you can see how the hero's story is modeled very, very much so in tarot itself, which I also never ever realized before. So like it just, if you're really into this stuff like me, go look up. I think his name's John Campbell. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on it. I think his first name is John though, for sure. But he's the one that writes the idea of the hero's journey and how it's present in a lot of cultural things when it comes to stories, even like religious scriptures and things like that. So to help you or someone else on your own journey, you can learn tarot, and here are some of the facts to help you understand the theory of tarot itself. The first thing is the numbers. So it actually starts 0 to 21 because the full card, which is going to be the major arcana, because we should talk about this first. Tarot cards are 78 cards, at least in today's divination. That's what we're going to talk about. If you want to learn about like the card playing games, go on Wikipedia. There's lots of different variations of Tarocco so that you can learn all of those different things. But this is the divination. So there's the major arcana and the minor arcana. There are 22 trump cards in the major arcana, and there are 56 pip cards that are broken into four suites, and each suite has 10 cards in them. So I also want to put a little injection in here to say that I'm going to be making a tarot theory page for you guys. So if you want a visual thing, like I'm a very visual learner, that will be available on Patreon at some point in time. I want to, you know, zhuzh it up a little bit and go through all of the grammatical semantics to make sure that it looks great and is good for you guys to the best of my ability. But that will be something that will be available on Patreon very, very soon in the future, hopefully. So let's just start though with how the tarot cards are going to be structured. And we're going to go into their numbers and planetary association too, because I know some people really like astrology or planets and things like that. So I think it's first important to understand the difference between the major arcana and the minor arcana before we move forward. So the major arcana is the 22 trump cards, and it goes in order of 0 to 21. So the first card in the major arcana doesn't actually have the number one associated with it, but instead the number zero. And it's kind of funny the fact that the very first card in the major arcana is going to be the Fool. And the fact that it's represented with the number zero is really funny to me. My mom had a friend who ended up buying a horse at an auction, and he was the last horse to come out for like the auction sale. And because he was the last horse, they actually forgot about him and they didn't have a number on his butt. So they just put a big old zero on him. And I think that horse's name ended up being Zero or something like that. But now it just makes me think that you could have called him like the Fool or something, and that would have been also just as cute. Anyways, major arcana cards. This is something I've never heard before, but it's something that I just recently read, that when thinking about the theory of tarot, the major arcana cards, those 22 cards, represent major life events, right? So if you're pulling cards for people, the 22 trump cards versus the pip cards, which are going to be the 56 suits or the 56 cards found in the suits, then think of them as like the overarching theme of whatever it is that is happening in your life or the person that you're pulling cards for. It's going to be the major life events, the big things that are going on. And then all of the minor arcana cards or the pip cards, those are going to be representative of the everyday shenanigans that just go on in your life. So for example, say you pull the Hermit card. The Hermit card represents introspection, solitude, rest, and reflection. So think of it as someone who's going to be sitting in their house and researching a lot of things, whether it be about themselves or about the world around them, but it's going to be quiet and it's just going to be sort of all about them in a very introspective and retrospective way. However, that's like a big life event. I feel like, oh, now looking back, I feel like my life over the past year has been a very hermity sort of thing. And that's like a big life event, because I feel like, you know, at one point in our life and the hero's journey, if you will, you're going out like the Fool and you're doing these new beginnings, this adventure, taking on new things, trusting in the universe, being spontaneous. That's a big life event. However, if we go back to the Hermit card, say you pull that card for yourself or someone else, that's going to be the big life event that's happening for that person. Say you pull another two cards because it's a three card pull for someone and you get two of the minor arcana cards or the pip cards. Say it's a two of cups or a seven of swords, then that's going to help you understand what's going on specifically towards that major arcana card, or how to better understand the specifics or the fine details of what's going on in relation to the idea of the Hermit. Does that make sense? I hope it does. I never understood tarot cards that way. So understanding that the major arcana, the trump cards, represent big life events, and then the minor arcana cards can be used to represent the everyday shenanigans or the things, the details that are going on in that big life event. That makes it so much easier for me to read tarot instead of just pulling cards and going, oh, I don't know, what does this mean? So I hope that helps you as much as it helps me, or at least I don't know, it's like that aha moment that I've been waiting for when it comes to tarot. So the other aha moments too is how everything's structured. So you have 0 to 21 when it goes to the major arcana or the trump cards, right? 0 is going to start with the Fool, and then every major arcana card after that is going to be 1 through 21. And they're associated with the numbers, planets up to the number 9, and then just the fact that they're structured from the first part of the hero's journey to the very end of the hero's journey, I think is really, really cool. So let's just start with the major arcana first, and we're going to go into the numbers, because I think the numbers and the numerology of the major arcana, as well as the planetary associations that you can draw from that, is more conducive to the major arcana than it is the minor arcana, but there is a lot of crossover. So don't let me saying that hinder you from finding any other sort of patterns or relativity to one another. Just to break it down to make it a little more simple. And again, when you have the tarot theory sheet that I'll make for you guys, it'll be a lot easier to see it visually, how everything sort of lines up, because that was another really big aha moment for me, was lining everything up and going, oh wow, that makes a lot of sense. So the major arcana cards in order from beginning to end, if you will, because we're going to go with the hero's journey, is first the Fool card, which is associated with the number 0. So the Fool card represents new beginnings, adventure, spontaneity, trusting in the universe. I think that the Fool card is a very, like, I'm ready to begin and embrace anything, even though I might not know whatever is yet to come, type of thing. You don't really have much forethought into what's happening, but you're just ready for anything. The ride or die sort of card, if you will. Now, the second card is going to be the Magician, which I think is really interesting. It's associated with being the first card in the deck for representing leadership, new beginnings, and it's associated with the Sun or the Self. So if we're talking about the major arcana cards and the major life events, because that's what these cards are representative of, the Magician is resourcefulness. It represents creativity, ingenuity, manifestation, and creating something from nothing, which I thought was very interesting. So when it comes to that idea of the hero's journey, you were once the Fool, and now you're like, okay, I just started this journey, but where is it going? And it's almost like the Fool meets the Magician, and the Magician is, you know, Gandalf, whatever you want to say to make this story more interesting to you. The Fool's journey is a part of the major arcana. So you start out as the Fool. And the way that I kind of look at this is the subsequent cards of, they can either be you or they can be people that the Fool meets in their journey. So i.e. the Magician, you're just, you know, skiddly bopping out in the woods doing whatever it is that you want to do on this journey. And then you meet this elusive Magician. He's like, hey kid, you want to see what I got inside of my coat? And that's sort of what starts to shape your journey of like, where is it that the Fool is going? The Magician is going to help you understand where it might be that this journey is going to start to manifest into. Is it going to be a journey of self? Is it going to be a journey of other people that are going to be molding you? Is it something that you're going to have to create physically? Things like that. So the third card, or the card that's representative of the number two, because remember, the Fool is synonymous with the number zero, is going to be the High Priestess. So two associations are partnership and harmony. The planet that the number two is associated with is the Moon, which represents emotions. And the card itself is the High Priestess. The High Priestess represents the subconscious mind, intuition, subtle movements, but those subtle movements that make big changes, kind of like a drop in the pool of water, if you will. So again, thinking back to, you know, tarot being the story of the Fool's journey, I like to think of the High Priestess as kind of someone that the Fool would meet to give you more perspective about things. So like the Fool meets the Magician, and the Magician is like, here, these are the tools that you have to create your journey. Now go have fun. And you're like, yeah, you got like a stick. You're hitting things in the woods. You're just running. You're like, yeah, this is great. I'm going to have an awesome journey. What? And then you start to kind of think like, well, what am I supposed to do with all of these things? I'm kind of like, this was cool, but I feel like I need a little bit of help. And then there's this woman that like rises out of the water and she's like, hey, come here. You want to look at your reflection? You want to see what you can do with these things, and I'll help you maybe give you a couple riddles on figuring out what it would be and the direction that you're going to be going with these tools that the Magician showed you, but you're feeling a little lost now. It's almost like the information clicked when you saw the Magician, but as you were running and excited about things, you started to figure out that this might be a lot harder than you thought. And the High Priestess is going to be the person that, you know, brings you back down and gives you the idea, the stuff to, the information to mull over, if you will.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Now moving on to the fourth card, or the card that's associated with number three, that is going to be the Empress. So the number three is representative of creativity and communication. The planet in Chaldean association is Jupiter, which represents luck. And the card itself is the Empress, which is symbolic of motherly love, fertility, nurturing, balance, and a positive, neutral sort of person. So when it comes to the more feminine cards, it's been hard for me over these 5 years to understand the difference between masculine energy and feminine energy. But when it comes to spirituality, the thing that I've really learned is that masculine energy is very forward movement. It's very external. It's doing things physically to invoke a change or elicit a response, whereas feminine energy is it's like the wind or water. Over time, it weathers things away. It moves very fluidly, if you will. It's the changes that arise more so from continuing on without trying to make a big disturbance, but nonetheless, a change is happening. So I feel like the Empress would be another person that the Fool would meet in their hero's journey that gives them reassurance, but I would say in more of a like, how would I explain this? I don't want to say omnipresent, but it's kind of like if you were to get directions from someone or guidance from someone, whereas the High Priestess, I feel like, could be more wishy-washy or poetic in the way that information is given to you. I sort of feel like the Empress would be someone that gives you directions, even if the directions don't look good. They're very impartial in their judgment, if that makes sense. Like, they would say, okay, well, you're going to have to go over these rocks and these boulders, right? And you're like, well, that seems like it could be really hard. And they're like, yeah, you probably could get hurt, but you still have to do it anyways. like that type of thing, where if you say something, it's not necessarily unfeeling, it's just more literal. So they sort of take the emotions out of their guidance, if you will. They're like the Switzerland, the neutral. Anyways, moving on to the fifth card, or the card that is representative of number four, is the Emperor. So more of a masculine energy. So four deals with stability and practicality. And four also resides in Uranus, or the idea of rebellion. So the Emperor card in the major arcana with the trump cards represents leadership, unwavering command, and decisive establishment. So you can really see where in the hero's journey of the Fool, how the Emperor could really change and manifest in a different way of like, here's your adventure. Now I'm going to give you specific guidance, decisive things and how you're going to move through this journey that you're on. And it's interesting to see how the energy changes as you're moving through the deck. The next card is associated with the number 5, and it's the Hierophant card. It deals with freedom and adventure. The planetary association is Mercury, which is communication. And the Hierophant card specifically represents conformity, tradition, acceptance, and following in the footsteps of others. The next card is going to be the Lovers card, which deals with the number 6 or is associated with the number 6. And the number 6 falls under the representation of responsibilities and love. The planet Venus, and Venus represents love and money. I think this one's interesting because I remember in the astrology video and podcast that was made talking about how love and money and love and responsibilities when it comes to astrology and like the house of Venus or the planet Venus and all of the houses and things like that. It was more representative of how in astrology love was seen as like marriage, and marriage was associated with responsibilities and money, because back then unions were joined between two people for being responsible and making money and not necessarily love. So I think it's interesting how 6 is responsibilities and love, because I don't know, in my opinion, love is a responsibility. But nonetheless, the Lovers card represents partnerships, excitement, love, desire, and newness. Now the next card is number 7, and number 7 is the Chariot card. Again, this is the 8th card in the deck though, because the Fool starts at 0. And number 7 represents spirituality and introspection. The planet is Neptune, which represents illusion, and the Chariot card itself represents control, overcoming obstacles, forward movement, willpower. And I think it was either you're commanding the tank or you're asking Jesus to take the wheel. Because I think, I should have said this before, but I'll just interject it now. When we're talking about card meanings, I'm talking about the card in its upright position. However, if you pull any of these cards, whether they be major or minor arcana, when the card is upright, the card is going to be representing whatever it is that the card's meaning is. However, if it's in reverse, it's going to be the opposite meaning. So that's why I said, like, Jesus take the wheel. That would be the the reverse of the Chariot card of you're not in control, but you're really hoping that someone's going to help you. So moving on to the next card, number 8. Number 8 is the Strength card, and the number itself, numerology meaning, is material success and power. The planet is Saturn, and Saturn represents karma. So, you know, the yin, the yang, the good, the bad, the what you give is what you get type of thing. So with Strength card, the Strength card represents courage, inner strength, compassion, choosing to fight rather than to run or fawn from something. I think that's pretty interesting. And again, you know, this is almost the middle card in our hero's journey of the Fool. And it seems like at this point in time, strength is something that you're going to have to need, because whether you're going to move forward or revert back is going to be dependent on how you either find courage or fawn from courage. So the next card is number 9, and number 9 is the Hermit. So the number 9 itself is associated with compassion and righteousness, and the planet association is Mars, which represents passion and action, which I think is kind of funny. This is one of the cards that I really don't understand or find that it has a pattern to, because this is the Hermit card. So when it comes to passion and action, you would think that that would be a very like masculine outward moving type of thing. But the Hermit specifically represents introspection, solitude, rest, and reflection. But maybe it's more like the rest and reflection that happens in order to push you or move you forward, like an arrow type of thing. Like you need to sit back and put tension on the bow before you release it and move it forward. So maybe that's how you could interpret that. But again, I'm not here to tell you necessarily how to interpret it. I'm just giving you the theory behind the tarot in order for you to make your own decisions. So the next card is the 10th card. Well, technically it's the 11th card, but number 10. And that is the Wheel of Fortune. Now, there aren't any more planetary associations because in Chaldean numerology, as far as I can understand it, 1 through 9 is really just where the planets stop and then it goes into different things. So there's no more planet associations necessarily that I was able to find. However, we still have numbers and the order of the cards themselves. So 10 deals with honor, faith, self-confidence, and the cycles of life. And you would be surprised to know that this card is the Wheel of Fortune. So the Wheel of Fortune deals with karma, the circles of life, and fate itself. Now the next card is number 11, which deals with justice. So number 11 itself is representative of truth, the law, consequences, and fairness. So I think that's kind of on point when it comes to hidden dangers, trials, and treachery. Like justice, if we're talking about this being a major life event, right? Because this is the major arcana. The justice card deals with truth, the law, consequences, and fairness. So it's interesting how those two things are kind of related, in my opinion. Number 12 is the Hanged Man. And the number 12 itself is associated with victimhood, hopelessness, and being a martyr. So when it comes to the Hanged Man's representation, it means letting go, new perspectives, uncertainty, or feeling restricted. And that's more so in the reversed position. Number 13 is the Death card. The number 13 itself deals with upheaval and destruction, power with potential for destruction. So I find that interesting that it's the Death card, because the Death card represents change, metamorphoses, upheaval, and transition. The 14th card is Temperance. Number 14 itself deals with combined elemental movements, or it means to proceed with prudence. Temperance itself deals with balance, pacing yourself, patience, and serenity, which I think kind of makes sense. The way I understood number 14 was all of the suits sort of come together. So like all of the elements, fire, water, earth, air, come together to make changes in life. And those could be very helpful changes, or they could be very detrimental changes depending on how you decide to move forward. So again, when it comes to temperance, it's finding balance, pacing yourself, having patience, and finding serenity. Number 15 is the Devil card. The number 15 itself in numerology is associated with black magic and underhanded power or manipulation. And the Devil card itself deals with obsession, secrecy, addiction, or mental health issues, which I find interesting how the number of the card in the deck and the association of the card itself is very close together. 16 is the Tower card, and the number 16 in numerology represents fatalities and metamorphoses and a sense of numbness. So the Tower card represents unexpected change, destruction, or traumas. Moving on to number 17, that is the Star card. And number 17 in numerology represents love and peace and not being forgotten. So Star represents guidance, direction, hope, faith, and healing, which I think is really cute because when it says not being forgotten, I don't know, I just think about like, you know, those cute little things where you can name a star after somebody, right? Not being forgotten, the Star card, number 17, I love it. All right, moving on, 18. The 18th card is the Moon card. 18th itself in numerology represents self-righteousness, disconnection from spirituality or spirit itself. And the Moon card deals with illusion, fear, or unpredictability. See, this card just, I like the Moon. I think everything under the Moon is like, I don't know, I guess it just shows you a different perspective of things. It's kind of reflective, if you will, because the Moon itself gets its light from the sun. So anyways, there's lots of ways to sit down and talk about this and write things out so that you can remember what cards mean what given the theory behind them. Now the next card is 19, and it is the Sun card. So the number 19 itself represents happiness, success, joy, and balance. And the Sun card represents positivity, vitality, and opportunity. The 20th card is the Judgment card, and 20, the number itself, deals with passion, a call to action, idealism, and hedonism. And the Judgment card is symbolic of forgiveness, self-evaluation, renewal, and decisiveness. Again, if we're going through the hero's journey, though, too, Judgment, I guess, because we have to think back to when the tarot cards were actually made, so during the Renaissance era, this card was also sort of synonymous with depictions of, like, the resurrection of Christ, which I thought was kind of interesting. So if you have a religious background for, like, Catholicism, Christianity, whatever, that's a way to sort of look at the Judgment card. And then the very last card, the 21st card, or the 21 card, but the 22nd card technically, because again, we're starting at zero with the Fool. 21st card is the world in the hero's journey. So 21 in numerology represents victory, honor, achievement, success, and forward progression. And the world card itself deals with fulfillment, wholeness, and accomplishment. So, you know, at the end of the Fool's journey, the hero's journey, you have the world, everything that they wanted, and then it could lead back into a new journey. So it's not necessarily a way to just look at one journey, but just all of the journeys that can be taken through to you in this life in and of itself, which I think is really freaking cool. So those are the major arcana cards and how you can sort of understand how they're presented, with the first card being the Fool and the last card being the world. And if you were to play it in Taroko, if someone played the Fool and then someone played the world, the person who played the world card would win that trick or win that turn of the game. So that's just sort of interesting how to see how it all goes back and forth with everything. The numbers, the planets, and how they're all ordered in the Fool's journey, if you will.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Now, this podcast is getting longer than I thought it was going to be. I honestly thought that I was only going to have like 20 minutes to a half hour of a podcast, which is what I am able to do right now. So I'm going to break this podcast into two parts, where next week we will talk about the minor arcana, revisit a couple topics possibly that I may have forgot to touch upon that I wanted to in this Sunday's podcast. And then we're also going to talk about how you can sort of interpret the cards, maybe in a like, I don't want to say how you can interpret the cards. I'm just going to give you ideas on how I have been able to understand tarot spreads and the symbolism in the cards in and of itself, because I've really been learning that, is it important to understand the cards' meanings and the theory behind them? Yes, but is it more important to understand the theory behind them and then use that to create your own idea and understanding of the cards? Yes, that's more so what I'm going for. So that's what we'll talk about next week. More creative ways for you to allow tarot to be something that is just a tool for your channeling and your spiritual practice. So thank you all so much for joining me this Sunday for a first part of tarot theory. And we'll see you all next week for part two. Peace.